Hey, if you're listening to this, I will assume you're at least interested in money, understanding the economy, and finances as well. And some of us now want to get the next generation interested as well. So check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. Tune into Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Get 1 month free and an extra $10 when you sign up for a Greenlight account at greenlight.com/million. Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl.
And I am Molly Wood. And
welcome back
to
Make
Me Smart,
the podcast. It is the sing-along episode. That's right. Doing air guitar. No, I'm kidding. Podcast where we, of course, talk tech, the economy, and culture.
That's right. We hear from experts and from you because none of us is as smart as all of us.
Except for the fact that I don't even know what I was going to say. We're taking a couple of weeks off. Making new episodes. We need a break from being so smart. And this is one of those. But we did not want to leave the podcast feed completely empty over the holidays. That is not best practices in podcast land. So we're not. We're not doing that. We're doing this.
It's not nice. You would miss us. You would miss us. All of us are smart enough to take a break, but still keep the feed alive.
That's what I meant to say.
Here for you with some of our favorite episodes from the past year, which I know feels like a rerun, but honestly, it's just it's like a re-listen opportunity.
Yeah, you saw
and
that one.
It's like it's re-gifting the best stuff
in the most positive way. Yes. So we are going back to our interview this week with Adam Conover. He's the host of the True TV show Adam Ruins Everything. It is billed as, and this is how they say it, an informational sketch comedy show. And if you don't know what that means, in a nutshell, basically it goes like this. Adam fact checks. I'm having really hard time speaking my native tongue today. You know why? Actually, I'll tell you why. It's because I had yogurt and a granola bar before I came into the studio. And I did not brush my teeth. That's a true
story.
Basically
like glue.
That's
you glued
true.
Your
yeah,
mouth
no,
closed.
I did. And I did not brush my teeth. Anyway, Adam fact checks myths around science and history, and he does it because he's a comedian and it's funny. So here's a clip, actually, from an episode called Adam Ruins Christmas.
Look, I know we're not that religious, but Mom and Dad made it a tradition. It's the one night a year we get together and have a nice, somber Christian evening.
Well, that's pretty weird, because historically, Christmas was actually a really raucous holiday, and most of our Christmas traditions have really unchristian origins. Here, I'll show you.
Wow.
Raucous. I haven't seen that one now. I have to go watch it. My son actually introduced me to these videos, and I became a huge fan and was like, dude, this is just like our show. And in fact, even though it is a comedy show, there are a ton of overlaps. Both of them try to combat bad information. We try. We're trying to help get smarter ourselves and then help other people get the facts straight too, and with experts. So Adam has experts come on and, you know, he tells you who they are and basically like footnotes his own show and tries to engage parties that might disagree, which is somewhat relevant for the holidays. See what we're doing here? When you're around your family, you might want to have some facts at hand. So here is our interview once more with Adam Conover. We started off by asking him about the appeal of a show that is both funny and educational.
Well, Adam Ruins Everything is, I call, an informational sketch comedy show, and we, the sort of simple version of the show is that we dispel common misconceptions and or tell you the awful truth about everything that you take for granted. I sort of felt that when I was developing the show, I mean, I'm a very curious person. I've been an information sponge my whole life. I've listened to, you know, I've been an NPR listener. I listen to podcasts. I read articles, you know, et cetera. And so I've always sort of collected facts and information. But at the end of the day, I'm just a comic. And I knew that, you know, there's a limit to how credible I'm going to be. We put our sources in the top of the screen so people know we've done our research. But at the end of the day, like, okay, buddy, why should I listen to you? And that at that moment, we bring in, someone who actually knows. We try to get the person who has, you know, really done the original research on the topic. And, of course, we do a little bit of comedy with them as well. But we sort of give them the final point of the segment.
But what's kind of interesting to me is that the show premise works and also worked. It launched in premiered in 2015, but you're addressing common misperceptions, which suggests that, you know, the era of alternative facts is not new. I mean,
they've just been weaponized, right?
Right. They've been weaponized, but this is clear. There was clearly a wealth of material for you to draw from even before the current environment.
Absolutely. I mean, when we talk about what the phrase alternative facts refers to, right? That refers to, you know, people who say, well, there is a, you know, professional journalist consensus about an issue, but I'm ignoring that and providing my own facts, right?
Right.
But even before that state of affairs happened, you know, occasionally the professional journalist or media narrative would also be incorrect about something. There'd be sort of like a notion about in the public overall that was the consensus sort of reality notion that was not true, you know, and that's what we sort of, that is sort of the main focus of our show is what do we have a broad cultural understanding of that is incorrect?
Do you ever feel in the in the alternative fact universe in which we live.
Sure.
You ever feel like you're spitting into the wind?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, sometimes the spit gets on me and I'm like, ugh, you know.
It's a big loogie, man.
Yeah, like, oh. I look at my Twitter mentions and I'm like, whoa, this one got all over me.
Yeah.
But my real belief about the show is that for all the press that fake news, alternative facts, and that sort of thing gets, people really have a craving for real information and for real knowledge. People genuinely love to learn, and that's universal and nonpartisan. And our show has been because it fulfills that need for people. And when we approach topics with good faith, right, and say, well, here's what we know, here's what we don't know, and here are the questions that we have, and, you know, we give provisos, here's an expert, here's all our sources,
mm-hmm.
people respond to that really well. And there's that, you know, 10% who say, you know, oh, you didn't say exactly what, you didn't confirm my priors, you didn't say exactly what I wanted you to say, so I'm pissed at you. We do get those people, but we get a lot of people who say, oh, you changed my mind on this, or, you know, wow, thanks for bringing light to this. It, it really does work.
Hmm.
I want to know what are some topics that got spit on you, but maybe we should stick to
that's a good one.
It's always surprising what topics turn out to be controversial. Like, we did an episode on the overall topic of going green, the idea of that through individual choice, we can, you know, save the planet if we just buy better stuff, right? And if we are, you know, if each of us conserves a little bit and buys better stuff, that'll save the planet, right? And that's not true. It actually takes, like, systemic, top-down, society-based change, right? So one of our examples for that was we talked about electric cars, and we talked about how, oh, everyone thinks that electric cars are going to save the world, but in fact, if you buy an electric car too often, if you, for instance, replace your perfectly good Prius with an electric car, because of all the emissions that go into making the car, the embodied emissions, you actually are increasing your carbon footprint thereby, right? The efficiency of the car's engine doesn't matter as much as the manufacturing overall.
But climate change isn't real, man.
Right?
So that goes to the whole confirming the priors and deeply divided sets of reality in this country.
But here's the interesting thing. That is the response I thought we would get. I thought we would get the people saying climate change isn't real. We actually got almost none of that. The angry people were the angry Tesla fans who believed so strongly in their vision of, no, I, by buying this cool car, am changing the world. Elon says so, and you can't tell me that's not true. And we had our, you know, people wrote long rebuttals to our segment that mostly misunderstood it. Maybe, you know, I sort of think, hey, maybe we could have presented, you know, a little bit better. You know, I always look for what we could have done better. But it was really surprising how much that we got pushback from fans of the brand, right?
So look, Tesla fans are not to be screwed with. That, I think, is the deal.
I think that's actually a lesson of 2018, in fact. Adam is going to tell us about some minds that he did change in just a second. It is not what we expected. We will take a quick break, and then we'll be back with more from Adam Conover.
All right, we are back and jumping right back in with Adam Conover. Here you go.
Well, aside from the reactionary, brand-loving liberal negative responses, which I think we can agree is a thing, can you think of a time when you really, like, got a piece of feedback or felt like you actually changed some minds?
Good question.
Because that's what we're all trying to do here.
Yeah. Where the feedback said that we had changed some minds specifically. Yeah, I mean, I hear it when I go do live shows, when I tour. You know, people tell me, you know, what they like about the show. And my favorite thing that people say is, hey, I didn't circumcise my kid because of your show. Right. Because we did a segment on the history of circumcision in America and how, not talking about religious circumcision, but the habitual rest of circumcision. There's no reason to do it. And we do it because the inventor of cornflakes was trying to stop kids from masturbating, which is true. And, you know,
you heard it here, folks.
Well, you can go watch our segment if you're
curious. Didn't think you were coming to this podcast for that, did you?
but
I did.
But, you know, people, when people say that to me, I'm like, man, that is a nice impact because we had impact on some little boy's life, you know? with that segment, or I didn't buy an engagement ring because of your segment, that kind of thing. You know, that's when we really know that it works.
When do you know it doesn't work?
I mean, there is, at the end of the day, you know, when we first started doing the show, I was like, yeah, man, we're changing the world. Holy, yeah, all right, we're gonna, like, all these practices that are based on malarkey, like, I'm going out there, I'm fighting the good fight. And then after doing it for about a year, I was like, people are going to keep buying engagement rings overall, though. You know, we're not going to, you know, we're not going to, mass incarceration is not going to end because we did a show about it. That was a little bit of a crestfallen moment when I realized that, when, you know, I realized there were the limits of our power. But, you know, the reason we do it is still that individual person who watches the show.
Right.
And I'm like, if we can open their minds to an issue to just a little bit, and even failing that, make them, you know, a little bit more curious and a little bit more critical of the information that they hear, then that is to me the point of the show. And it's nice to make a living talking about stories that we care about and making jokes. So
yeah, well, one thing that really surprised me was to discover that the show was not necessarily intended for kids. I watch it with my 11-year-old, who probably now knows like too much about circumcision.
I love that.
Can you ever really But I feel like if you're going to start with changing minds and creating questioners, sort of why not aim it at kids? Or are you just sort of happy to have anybody who comes along and gets smarter, if you will?
Well, that's a really good question. I mean, we didn't anticipate that the show would have so many kid fans when we made it. You know, like I got started at a website called College Humor, where we made the original series, and then we went on True TV. We're airing at 10 p.m. And so I was like, all right, we're making a comedy show for adults. We're making a show that I want to see. And about midway through the first season, people started tweeting at me saying, like, here's a picture of me and my kid watching the show. My 8-year-old is a real fan. Look, they're dressing up as you for Halloween, kind of stuff. And I was like, oh my God, that's wonderful. But we have shows about sex and death coming up. And I started to get really afraid that we would get a backlash once we got to that heavier material. And thank goodness we didn't. You know, at the end of the day, I think people are happy to have their kids learn, even when it's about those adult topics. You know, you can't go to a TV network and say, we want to make a show that's for adults and kids together, because then they're splitting their sort of like marketing,
sure,
you know, like
sure.
Then
advertising.
The advertisers want to focus on one or the other. Right. They don't want to split between two markets. But as a creator, I am so happy that it worked out that way.
Yeah. And I'm going to say, I do not want this to influence your content making in the slightest, because I definitely want you to be the person delivering the talk about sex and death, not me. So like, keep it coming.
I'm glad to hear that. Well, no, that's a really nice way to put it, actually.
Well, they're going to have that. Yeah. I mean, we all know they're going to have that moment no matter what. So
yeah,
you know, it might as well come in the context of learning.
Yeah, and with some comedy that makes it go down more easily. I mean, comedy really, really helps. There's a George Carlin quote that I'm going to butcher, and I'll just paraphrase it. But it's from his book that he wrote before he died. And he wrote about how when someone is laughing, all of their defenses are down. And at that moment is when you can like plant a little seed of something new in them, and then that'll grow the rest of the time. Throughout the rest of their life. And so that approach is really what informed the rest of my career when I read that.
Right there is the end of this interview, right, Mara? Okay. All right.
We always know.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Except for one last thing.
Yeah. So we have a question we ask everybody who comes on this podcast, and it goes like this. What is something you thought you knew but later found out you were wrong about?
Oh, man, I love this question. Well, we did an episode on wellness, right? The concept of wellness, which is usually by which we meant alternative medicine.
Yeah.
And I thought going in that, okay, we're going to do, this is going to be easy slam dunk episode. We're going to show how all these things, you know, Reiki healing and, you know, massages and essential oils and stuff like that, how it's all nonsense. And we're going to tell people, hey, go to traditional medicine and go to your doctor, right? And our big slam dunk for the end of that, I was going to be on placebos and how the placebo effect is so much more powerful than you think it is. And that explains why so many of these things work. When you say, well, no, this really helps me. Hey, sorry, it's just the placebo effect. It's actually way more powerful than you think. And that's how it can do all the, that's why that alternative medicine seems to do all those incredible things. In the course of researching that segment and talking to, you know, there's these folks at Harvard at, I think it's called the Center for Placebo Studies. You know, these are indisputably the world experts on the study of placebos. We realized by talking to them about their work that the truth about the placebo effect is it is actually so powerful. It's a really valuable part of medical treatment. And in fact, it's used by it's actually used in traditional medicine. When the doctor, you know, listens to you patiently and touches your, you know, the place where you hurt, you know, and gives you a medicine and says, this is really going to help, right? That is taking advantage of the placebo effect in exactly the same way as if you go see a, you know, Chinese traditional medicine practitioner. And that means that those alternative medicine procedures, as long as they're not doing any harm to you, some of them are harmful, but the majority are not. And as long as you're not ignoring traditional medicine, that can actually give you a real benefit. So our final takeaway from that episode ended up being, hey, use this stuff. If it's not hurting you and you're not neglecting, you know, science-based medical treatment, as long as you're still getting your cancer treated, hey, go get the sound healing if it reduces your pain. And that was really something I didn't expect. It was so wonderful and really validated the primary principles of our show, values of our show, which is that we never know anything for sure. It's always worth questioning every belief that you have. And it's always a good thing when you find out that you were wrong. It happened to us in the course of producing that episode, which was incredibly rewarding.
So that was Adam Conover. New season of Adam Ruins Everything is running right now on True TV. Perhaps you have seen the billboards. They're kind of all over the place here in Los Angeles. I thought it was kind of cool that he was actually in studio with me. Molly was remote up in Oakland, but it was kind of cool to see him.
I know. I was super jealous. And I also feel like we got him just at the right time because then he got the billboards. I mean, I'm just saying he kind of blew up right after he was
today,
on our show.
Today in correlation is not causation. Make me smart and Adam ruins everything.
Today in Molly takes all the
That's
credit.
That's right. That's right. You know what? More power to you, sister. All right. Anyway.
Why not?
I know, right? Make Me Smart is produced by Sharon Morris. Senior producer is Eve Troat. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Also directed the show this week and did an outstanding job. The program was engineered not by Ben Tolliday. Oh, you failed there, Tony, in the rundown. Engineered by Jake Gorski. Theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Sorry, dude. I gave you up, right?
Oh, my goodness. We'll be back next week with another one of our favorites. The executive director of On Demand is Sitara Nieves, and the senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.